I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we are talking about snacking cakes. As distinguished from snack cakes, which to me is like a, you know, like a Hostess or Little Debbie convenience
right,
store product.
Right, of course. Okay, so this is different. And I think we're going to maybe spend most of this episode trying to define what is a snacking cake.
This is true. It's also something that I've thought of as like an everyday cake.
Yeah,
Everyday cake.
Before we get started, quick reminder, if you're listening to this on the day it airs or shortly thereafter, the live show that we did, the Lightning Round show, will be available to view on our Reddit page until the end of June. That's reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. It was super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry you weren't there,
everybody. I don't want to oversell
everybody.
It. I mean, maybe you were.
Maybe you were. Well,
we'll do
you
it
can
again.
Relive it again. So, okay, it seems to me that, like, you know, as we head down memory lane, we should acknowledge that this agenda is just going to be a little bit of a mess because, I think we're going to be talking about what defines a snacking cake as an integral part of talking about snacking cakes.
And I don't think I really thought about the concept of a snacking cake until last year when wife of the show, Lori, started making snacking cakes, which we'll get into.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so should we start with memory lane or should we start by trying to define a snacking cake?
Let's define a snacking cake. Let's go off-roading here, Matthew. I know that memory lane always comes first, but I think our listeners are old enough now to be able to go with us wherever we take this road.
Oh yeah, I love going off-roading. I've got my Suzuki Sidekick all gassed up.
Great. Okay, let's go. Vroom vroom. So, okay. What makes a cake a snacking cake as opposed to like a birthday cake, you know?
Okay, here's my definition.
Okay.
You ready for this? Mm-hmm. It's a square cake that sits around in your house and nobody gets upset if you cut off a random square or rectangle of any size from it and eat it at any time.
Okay.
And, that's my definition.
Have you gotten in trouble before for cutting other shapes off of a square cake or for cutting into a round cake?
Yes, no, of course. If I cut a trapezoid out of a square snacking cake, there would be a trial. There'd be an inquest.
What if you cut a triangle?
If I cut a corner off, like in a triangular way?
I'm just messing
with you. No, I don't think that would be okay. I think that would be like cutting like the tip off a slice of pie.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay, for you, it's a square cake, and it's the kind of thing that you know, sits out on the counter, and it is expected and encouraged that everyone in the household will come and just take a rectangle of it whenever they want.
That's exactly it. Yeah, like, it's okay. Like, the rectangles don't always have to be the same size. Like, you can go, like, who's an artist who uses a lot of rectangles? Like, Rothko? But his rectangles are more, like, similar sized, I feel like.
Oh, lots of artists use rectangles. Even
okay,
my
like,
child.
You know, like, yeah, okay, like a June
like
style
June.
Abstract
Let's
piece.
Let's see
with
here.
A lot of
Saul
rectangles.
LeWitt.
Saul LeWitt, for example.
You know, Mondrian. You know,
okay,
there are a lot
of
rectangles in there. Let's go on and on. Agnes Martin. Many rectangles.
It's fine to go totally Agnes Martin on a snacking cake, but you can't go, okay, who's an artist who uses a lot of triangles or trapezoids? I don't know. Like, I'm realizing like how few artists I know. Like,
wow.
You don't want to go like Salvador Dali on a snacking cake. But you know, now that we said that, like,
you don't want to go all like dripping clock on a snacking cake.
No, you don't want to let your clock drip on a snacking cake, obviously. Yeah. But now that we've said this, like, it didn't even occur to me to cut a weird shape off of the snacking cake. And like, if no one can hear me saying this in the house, like, next time there's a snacking cake, I'm going to do this and see what happens.
Are you just going to like cut like a like some sort of random shape out of the very center of it and leave the entire rest of the cake?
You know, I feel like I might not get in trouble for that because, like, the edge is the best part, right?
Oh, no.
No?
No.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh, God. Okay. Wow. This is more exciting than I thought. Okay, Matthew, it's my turn to define a snacking cake, okay? So, in contrast to you, for me, whether it's square or round, both feel equally snack cakey to me. But what is important is that it's a single layer.
I have a question about art.
Okay.
Do you want to finish your snacking cake definition?
Sure.
Single layer, definitely.
Single layer. I don't think of a snacking cake as having frosting. Now, it might have some sort of a thin icing or glaze that you can like pour over it. But I don't want to deal with frosting this bad boy.
I agree.
So no frosting. And often it just has one flavor element. So like almond paste or nutmeg or...
The one that Lori and I just finished off this morning, which was a sesame cake.
Ooh.
With tahini in the batter and lots of sesame seeds sprinkled on top. Very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think in general, for me, what I think of first is like single layer. More than the cake shape, more than, you know, what's expected in terms of shape of slice.
Think a lot about slice shape expectations.
Cause you do.
It's all I want to talk about. Do you think a snacking cake should be edible by hand as opposed to with utensils? And do you eat snacking cakes with your fingers?
Most of the time, yes.
Me too.
I don't think that's part of the definition, at least not for me. But I do mostly eat them out of hand, as we say.
I mean, I feel like fingers are a bigger part of... I'm just realizing that fingers are a big part of snacking, right?
Fingers are a big part of snacking. Everything is fingerable.
Everything is fingerable. Wow. Okay, that's our new t-shirt.
All right.
Okay, so here's my question about art.
Oh, okay.
Like, are there painters that collaborate with other painters on paintings? Because, like, if I think of any other kind of art I can think of, like, you know, people collaborate on novels and songs and... those are the only two kinds of art I can think of. Plays, drama. Do people ever collaborate on paintings? Go.
I'm not going to say no, because that seems too definitive.
Does it seem like that would be fun?
It doesn't seem like it would be fun to me. No. I am sure that there are painters out there who are known for their collaborative work, or maybe, you know, for whatever reason, like, yeah, all of a sudden I can think of even other types of visual artists who freely collaborate.
Yeah, like video game artists.
Or even, you know, I'm thinking of sculptors or performance artists.
Okay, I have a feeling that many of our listeners are art historians and are going to let us know, like, which painters collaborate with other paintings. Because I feel like, what if I was a painter and I was really good at, like, painting people, but I wasn't very good at painting castles, and I wanted to do, like, a cool, like, medieval castle painting. Like, maybe my friend is really good at painting castles, but not people, and, like, together, it would be awesome.
And we should say that this is...
Artists collaborate, obviously.
We should say this is separate from any idea of like a famous artist having an atelier,
right?
Of painters who work for him or her. I don't think of that as a collaboration in the way we're talking about, right?
No, this is like two artists like sitting down in front of a canvas together and like deciding who's going to paint what. And I mean, you can collaborate on cakes.
You can. Speaking of which, you know, do you think it's a collaboration when we cook a recipe out of a cookbook? Nah.
Like you're collaborating with the author? No, yeah, I don't.
I don't think so either. I think that this is one of those cute ideas that you see show up in like a recipe headnote or cute food essay, like collaborate.
In a way, isn't every recipe like a collaboration with those who came before us?
Gosh, that's beautiful, Matthew.
Thanks.
Okay. But anyway, what I'm trying to say here, Matthew, is that there is an entire book called Snacking Cakes. And this episode is not about that book, but we're going to be talking about it a lot. And the book I'm talking about is Yossi Arifi's Snacking Cakes.
Yes.
Which came out in 2020. And can I tell you what she says about what a snacking cake is?
Please do.
So I read this wonderful article that Rebecca Den, friend of the show, Rebecca Den, here in Seattle, of the Seattle Times, wrote about Yossi's book. And in this article, Yossi reportedly explains that a snacking cake is a snake.
Wow. That is not the definition I expected. I thought it was going to be some kind of food. But it's a reptile. It was a reptile all along. Like, I knew it. Snakes are so fucking sneaky. Like, they, you know, they slink through the grass. They pose as cakes. They're always, like, wherever you are in the world right now listening to this show, there's a snake within 3 feet of you. And if you don't think there is, something you're looking at is a disguised snake.
Matthew. It's unusual for me to cry this soon into the episode. Okay,
you're welcome.
Anyway, Yossi says, it's a cake for the sake of having some cake, which sounds to me like a tongue twister, but I love it.
It's
right?
a cake for the sake of having some cake. Some cake.
Let's set it to music. It's a cake for the sake of having some cake. Beat'em,
beat'em. It's a cake for the sake of having some cake.
Okay. Rebecca Den goes on to say, it's a quick and simple cake that can do triple duty as dessert, breakfast pastry, or tea time nibble.
Yeah.
Quadruple duty.
Yeah. Snacky cakes are great for breakfast.
I would never do that. I just wouldn't eat a cake for breakfast. It's not
who I am. I literally
did
that today. It wasn't my only breakfast. I also had some bran flakes and a slice of bacon.
Yeah. No, I would never. It wouldn't occur to me to eat cake for breakfast.
But it's like right there.
Yes. What shape did you cut it into?
Rectangle. There was like a rectangle, like a 2x1 rectangle remaining. And so I cut one square off it. So, I mean, a square is a kind of rectangle, obviously. But I actually made a square.
Okay. Matthew, let's go down memory lane now.
Okay. The only snacking cakes that I remember from childhood in particular, I have never been much of a cake eater until recently. And I remember coffee cake. Would you say coffee cake is a snacking cake?
I would, because coffee cake is not... So coffee cake, I don't think of as a dessert cake.
Right.
I think of it as something that shows up on like a brunch menu or at like a church potluck, if I had ever been to one of those.
Yeah. So like all the brunches and church potlucks of my youth featured coffee cake.
Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right.
I did love brunch as a kid. I've never been to a church potluck either.
Well,
but I love coffee cake.
Oh, I love coffee cake too. Do you like it with like streusel on top? Do you like a streusel
absolutely.
Layer in the middle?
Both,
or a crumb layer, crumble, crisp.
Is that? I don't think I knew that was different from streusel. We did a coffee cake episode. We probably talked about all these permutations.
Oh, gosh, we did. When did we do a coffee cake episode?
In the past.
Okay.
Maybe I'm going to say 2007. No, that 2017.
That was before we were doing the show, Matt. But
well, it was before you were doing the show. Oh, I have a secret.
You were here alone in your bedroom.
Yeah, just
making podcasts.
Like, it sounded a little something like this. So, coffee cake. Is it a snacking cake? Is it a dessert cake? Let's find out.
I would listen to this like to lull me to sleep.
When you have insomnia. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those first episodes that I was doing myself had negative episode numbers.
You are counting down.
Counting down. Like, I know something's going to happen when I get to episode zero.
Okay, Matthew, I want to talk about my snacking cake memory lane.
Please.
So I don't remember having cake much as a kid outside of birthday parties.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, not even coffee cake. I remember cake being a birthday party thing. I never thought about the idea of a cake as something that could be as everyday as a cookie until I got a copy of Edna Lewis's The Taste of Country Cooking.
Oh, okay.
Which I think I picked up a copy of it in like 2007 or something.
Oh, right when I was starting Solo Spilled Milk.
Yeah. I was busy reading Edna Lewis at that time. You were podcasting alone in your room.
You were studying up for being the future host of Spilled Milk.
Yeah. One of the first recipes that I dog-eared in Edna Lewis's The Taste of Country Cooking was a recipe she called Busy Day Cake or Sweet Bread. I love her description of it. Busy Day Cake was never iced. It was always cut into squares and served warm, often with fresh fruit or berries left over from canning. The delicious flavor of fresh cooked fruit with the plain cake was just to our taste, and it was also very refreshing with newly churned chilled buttermilk or cold morning's milk.
Oh, that sounds great.
Right?
Yeah. So, what a writer, right?
Oh, I love Edna Lewis. Speaking of which, have you ever read the introductions that she has? So the book is organized chronologically through the seasons, and it's a number of menus, like hog butchering breakfast, stuff like that. But anyway, she has these wonderful introductions at the beginning of each season, and they are so lyrical and just
stunning. Okay, I need to reread it.
Do it. Okay. Anyway, her recipe for what she calls a busy day cake is basically like a really quick to assemble white cake that's made with butter. I remember it having like this kind of surprisingly nubbly texture, like a really tender cornbread. Anyway, it's like flavored with vanilla. I mean, that's it. And I just remember being blown away by how delicious it was.
Yeah.
With no icing, no nothing. You know, once I had written all of that into our agenda, Matthew, I did remember this cake that, so, you know, shout out to Crescent Market. Rest in peace, Crescent Market.
The suit of armor, the carpet.
So over along the wall where the suit of armor was and where the fireplace was, there was this rack where they sold like bakery items that they had brought in from other local bakeries. And this was, I feel like this was kind of something that nobody else was doing in Oklahoma City in the 80s. So there was this loaf cake that was bright pink with a bright pink like glaze, like poured icing on top of it. And it was a raspberry cake with raspberry glaze.
Oh, okay. That sounds good.
It was unbelievably good. And that maybe is like the closest thing I can think of to a snacking cake in my youth.
Remember when we did the pudding cakes episode? A pudding cake is a snacking cake.
Yes. I think you're right. Do you think that it's a snacking cake because it's...
You can't really cut a square or a rectangle out of it.
Do you feel like bundt cakes are inherently snacking cakes? Because I feel like a bundt cake is a kind of shape that like you would have with tea, or you would take to a picnic if you were the kind of person to bring an entire cake to a picnic.
Yeah, I mean like... I think of a bundt cake as being like an unfussy cake, because like what we're really talking about is not a layer cake, right?
And correct.
Not like a daintily frosted cake.
Right. We're not talking about like petit fours.
We're not talking about petit fours. Our petit four episode will be next week.
I can't wait. We just came up with this idea. Great. Where do we go from here, Matthew?
Oh, let's talk about snacking cakes we have made. Should we do that?
Yeah, let's do. So it's interesting. I've now made two recipes from Yossi Arifi's book. But, you know, when I sat down yesterday to make a list of snacking cakes I've made, I feel like I have been, like, snacking cakes have been my favorite baked item to make for more than a decade now. When I look at it, in total...
I knew that about you.
Yeah. I mean, I am like really apparently into snacking cakes, but I only just now with Yossi's book learned that it's called a snacking cake because I was calling it an everyday cake, which was kind of my summation of like Edna Lewis's description of a busy day cake.
It's kind of a cake that you can eat like a cookie, not in the sense that it has the texture of a cookie, but like you can go to the cupboard and grab it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay. What are some of your snacking cakes of your?
I mean, of your meaning like the last year, since Yossi's book came out.
What does your really mean?
What does your mean? And what's a yeoman?
Oh, and if you're putting that thing around an ox's neck, is it a yoke ending in a K-E or a yolk? Like an egg. Let's make this our words that begin with Y spelling episode.
I think it's a yak.
Oh, it's a yak. Okay.
Yeah. What's a wildebeest? We talked about this recently, didn't we? And I didn't look it up.
That doesn't start with a Y.
Well, I was going to say, what's a yak? And then I remembered that I always get confused about what a wildebeest is. Like, I don't think it's a lot like a yak. Like, is a yak like a buffalo?
What was the animal we talked about recently that you fooled me into thinking was real?
Oh, I was going to say a Gruffalo, but that's not it. It's Mark Ruffalo. He's not real. It was the thing from Bloom County.
Gruffalo.
I think a Gruffalo is from like Shel Silverstein or something.
No,
maybe.
The Gruffalo is its own book.
It's its own book. Okay.
Julia Donaldson maybe is one of the authors.
And Streganona.
I love the Gruffalo. Streganona.
Streganona is the animal that you thought was real.
Okay.
What? It's like, This is going to drive me crazy.
No, it's like a jackalope.
Jackalope. That was it. Yes.
So wait. Hold on.
A jackalope isn't real. Do we have to have this conversation again?
A jackalope is not real. I still can't believe it. I'm stunned.
Okay, great. What were we talking about?
Snacking cakes that we've made.
Okay. So you said you've made two recipes from the book Snacking Cakes?
Yeah, I have. So yesterday I made her powdered donut cake.
Oh,
have
I heard that was one of the best ones. No.
It's so good. So it's basically a white cake. It has about a cup. I think it has a cup of sour cream in the batter.
Yeah, I love sour cream cake.
And it also has a lot of nutmeg. Now, I didn't even measure my nutmeg because it's supposed to be 1 1/4 teaspoons, I think, of freshly grated nutmeg. And whenever I use freshly grated nutmeg, the thought of trying to corral it into a teaspoon makes me feel crazy.
No, you just grind it out.
I just grated it on my microplane right over the bowl, and I think I could have even used a tiny bit more. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's like this really like pillowy, light, but moist white cake. And then when it is almost fully cooled, but not totally cool, you brush it with a tablespoon of melted butter, which is actually like, I was worried it wouldn't be quite enough butter, but it was actually plenty. You brush it all over with a tablespoon of butter, and then you dust it with 3 tablespoons of powdered sugar, which creates this like really nice thick carpet of powdered sugar.
Have you ever brushed butter on a cake before?
No, but I have.
I haven't even heard of that technique.
Well, I've made like donut muffins. Have you ever made donut muffins?
Sure, yes. Yeah.
So it's that concept where like you take a muffin, you know, not in a muffin paper, and you brush it all over with butter or dip the top in butter, and then roll it in cinnamon sugar, powdered sugar. Anyway, this powdered donut cake was everything I love about a powdered sugar donut without me having to leave the house.
That sounds great.
And then I've also made, one of my favorite cake recipes of the past 5 years is her pumpkin bundt cake with maple brown butter glaze.
Interesting. I'm not much into pumpkin flavored things, but wife of the show, Lori, would love this.
Well, so the recipe first appeared in the New York Times, and that's where it has
as
this
a news story.
That's yes. Best pumpkin cake ever, says host of the show, Molly Weisenberg. So that's where
they didn't even specify which show. It was a weird article.
That's where it appears as pumpkin bundt cake with maple brown butter glaze. It also appears in the Snacking Cakes book under a slightly different title. You'll know it because she sprinkles pepitas on top,
okay,
which I don't actually do. But anyway, it is an incredible recipe. So yeah, her pumpkin cake with maple brown butter glaze.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Now, I want you to guess how many recipes from the book Snacking Cakes wife of the show Lori has made since the book came out.
I know for sure that you made some sort of a sumac cake because you mentioned it in our sumac episode.
That was the rhubarb crumb cake with sumac crumb.
Okay. What else? I'm guessing that Wotzel has made 6 recipes from the book.
The correct answer is 15.
Oh my gosh. Hold on. I'm going to open up the table of contents.
I'm not going to go through all of them. Some of them were not our favorites, but I'm going to list off the 5 that were my favorites.
Okay.
Salty caramel peanut butter cake, maybe number 1.
Okay. That one I have seen show up on other places online, and it just sounds incredible.
Brown butter pecan and white chocolate cake. And the thing I liked best about this was, like, you know, we did a white chocolate episode, and like we said, like, you know, at least I said, like, I don't really think of myself as a white chocolate fan. Mm-hmm. But then we talked about caramelized white chocolate, and you don't caramelize white chocolate for this recipe, but you do sprinkle it with white chocolate chips or fèves on top.
Okay.
And they get really browned, and the browned white chocolate bits are so good.
Oh, I'm looking at this recipe. Oh my gosh, this looks really good, and I would never think to make this.
This next one was made not by Wotzel, but by Silots W., sister-in-law of the show, Wendy.
Okay.
Which was milk chocolate chip hazelnut cake with cocoa whipped cream.
Okay.
And like whipped cream with a snacking cake, I think is an exception to like the no like fancy frosting rule, because like it's so easy to whip up some whipped cream and throw it on a cake.
No, that's pushing it for me. That's okay. Pushing it. I don't know if I can be bothered. What else,
Matthew? Rhubarb crumb cake with sumac crumb. Very yep. tasty. Mm-hmm. And probably second favorite, pretty close second after the salty caramel peanut butter cake, although it could be recency bias because I ate it this morning, was the simple sesame cake. It's just a cake with a lot of tahini in it and toasted sesame seeds sprinkled on top.
So I have a question for you. So one of the things that I think is notable about this book, you know, it's really a shame that we don't have the author on the show today.
Yeah. But one of the things that's grill her.
One of the things that's really notable is that, like, she gives lots of ideas for substitutions and riffs to make use of what you've got on hand, which I think should be kind of a hallmark of a snacking cake recipe.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't have to leave the house to get the ingredients. You know?
That's right.
I mean, ideally. Also, I want to add that I think snacking cakes, that I'm biased towards snacking cakes that don't require me to remember to soften the butter ahead
yes.
of time.
Yes. Oh,
right?
Wotzel asked us to mention that that's one of the good things about the book is that you don't have to remember to soften butter for hardly any and possibly none of the recipes.
Yeah. So it's either melted butter or oil.
Yeah.
Which I love because this possibly makes a snacking cake easier to achieve than a cookie, because with a cookie, you usually have to remember to take the butter out. There's not really like a workaround for that with a cookie.
I do like my favorite chocolate chip cookie recipe uses melted butter, but like in general, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, wait. I have more everyday cakes that I've made.
Okay, great.
Okay, so the first cake that Ash ever learned how to make, and the only one still that they make with any frequency, is Amanda Hesser's almond cake from Cooking for Mr. Latte.
Oh, which we've talked about before, and I said I was going to make, and I still haven't.
It is a recipe for the ages. It has both almond paste in it and almond extract. I use a little bit less almond extract than mm-hmm. the recipe calls for, and I love almond flavor. But what I love about it is that you bake it in like a 9-inch springform pan, and then the center collapses as it cools.
Right.
So it's got this wonderful fudgy texture, probably from the almond paste.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you see that, that's like a cake that's gone bad.
No. This is great.
Time.
This is great. Okay. So yeah, Amanda Hesser's almond cake is an everyday cake in our household. Of course, banana bread in every permutation, I think, is a cake.
Yeah.
Discuss.
I'll buy that.
Yeah?
No, you don't have to. We're not going to have the Lincoln Douglas debate on this issue.
Oh, okay. Okay. So banana bread. You know, I also want to give a shout out to the Hedgebrook cookbook, which was a cookbook published by two longtime cooks at Hedgebrook, the women's writing retreat on Whidbey Island, Washington. Anyway, for their 20th or 25th anniversary, they published a cookbook. And in it, there's a recipe for a butter cake that you can put any kind of fruit in that you want to. And what I like to do is make friend of the host, Dana Cree's rhubarb compote. And I make this.
We have some of that in our fridge right now.
I make this this butter cake. You plop about half of it, maybe 2/3 of it into a square pan, and then you dollop rhubarb compote over it
wow.
and put the rest of the butter cake batter on top and bake it. And it looks so humble. Like by the time you're done, it's hard to really see that there's a coherent layer of rhubarb in there. But the butter cake and the rhubarb compote, oh, it's so good. And
now,
that
this is
me,
so interesting to me. No one else is going to find this interesting. But that sounds great. And the thing I realized like over the course of eating 15 snacking cakes is like my favorite flavor is chocolate. Like in the world. But my favorite snacking cakes are not chocolate. Like we've tried a couple, like the cocoa yogurt cake with cocoa glaze or the chocolate peanut butter cake, which like, you know, by the name and picture seem like, oh, those would definitely be my favorites. And in both cases, I was like, this kind of reminds me of like why I'm not usually a cake person, because I eat this and I'm like, it's fine, but I wish I had a brownie. Whereas non-chocolate cakes are like, oh, this is a different kind of thing that doesn't like make me want anything else.
I think you're building to a thesis here, Matthew.
And I think I might be.
And if I may try to guess what it is.
Are you going to do like a Hegelian synthesis?
I don't even know what that is. I think that a snacking cake maybe is
a state of mind.
It's a snake, okay?
We know that.
A snacking cake is ideally a non-chocolate product. Or if it has chocolate in it, it's going to be in the form of like chunks or chips.
Yes.
What do you think about this?
I think there are people who would violently disagree with that, possibly even the author of the book Snacking Cakes, because there are a bunch of chocolate cakes in that book. But to me, I do agree that's like the kind of snacking cake that I want to eat. Like an example, like there's a great book by Lauren Chatman that we also have on our shelf called Cake Keeper Cakes from 2009, back when I was doing Spilled Milk solo. Someone listening is going to believe that this is a real thing I did and not a joke.
Yep.
Called Cake Keeper Cakes, which has a snacking cake section, and there's a recipe in there for like a graham cracker cake with chocolate chips that I don't even remember if we've made or not, but I keep like opening to that page and I'm like, could you please make this one next?
You know, it's interesting because I love chocolate, but I think that when it comes to baked goods, always my preferred baked goods have like actual pieces of chocolate in them if they're going to have chocolate at all. So even a brownie, I like all kinds of brownies. I mean, I think a brownie is a perfect food. There we go. I said it. But I think a brownie with chunks of chocolate in it is really where it's at.
Oh, yeah. Like if I'm going to buy the Ghirardelli brownie mix box,
the double chocolate.
Always double chocolate. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So as I continue to talk about like what snacking cakes I've made, I'm realizing there's like no chocolate in here except for the occasional chocolate chunk in banana bread. So, okay.
That's the name of your new cookbook, The Occasional Chocolate Chunk.
The last one that I want to mention is from a book called Southern Cakes by Nancy McDermott.
Yes.
Nancy McDermott, lovely human. And her book, Southern Cakes, gosh, it came out over a decade ago. I've had it for a long time. And there is a recipe in there that for me is worth the price of the book. And it is her sweet potato pound cake.
Okay.
I particularly like to make it with the yellow fleshed sweet potatoes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It almost like creates this flavor that is hard to pinpoint. Because it doesn't scream, you know, it's not bright orange. Anyway,
so if you didn't tell someone it was a sweet potato cake, they might not know and just say, this is like, this cake has like an interesting undertone.
That is correct. You know, what I'm realizing is that are all pound cakes snacking cakes?
It seems like it. I mean, they're... Because in the snacking cakes book, like she does talk about, like you can bake many, many, if not all of them in a loaf pan. So it's not that they have to be flat.
That's correct.
And yeah, like if there's a pound cake sitting on the table and like you went off and cut a slice of any thickness, no one would think that was a weird thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a snacking cake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we make your pound cake, berry pound cake from Homemade Life, right?
Oh my gosh, that's often. A snack. Is that a snacking cake?
Seems like it.
It seems
I snack
like
on it when it's
cake.
Around.
Me too. I haven't made it in ages. Oh my gosh, I love that you mentioned it.
I think that's like Silots W's all-time favorite cake.
Really?
I think so. I don't want to speak for Silots W, but...
Oh my gosh, I'll have to tell my mom. That's a recipe she's been making for an age.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, Matthew.
Should we move on to segments?
Yeah.
But the segments have to be rectangular.
Great.
Spilled mail. We don't have any this week. Get in touch. Contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com. Ask us a question, and if we want to answer it, we will.
Our cute animal that you should know... This week, I'm really pleased to present the golden snub-nosed monkey eating berries.
Oh, the GSNM.
Yeah. So you got to hear the sound he makes. So number one, this monkey looks like a kid in a Halloween costume.
Oh, I love that this is 20 seconds long. Okay. This monkey looks like a kid in a Halloween. I can't believe this is real.
Right? Look at his nostrils. He also kind of looks like a Day of the Dead skull.
Are you sure this is real? Do monkeys stand up like this?
I don't know. Look at this thing. Anyway, look at his nostrils. There's also something about his face that is so like human skull-like. Am I right?
Yeah.
He looks like a sculpture of a human skull.
I feel like he's about to talk, right?
Oh my God. Look at him. Look how he reaches for the berries. And what is up with the loud noise his mouth makes?
I mean, monkeys don't have manners. That's one of the great things about being a monkey.
Oh, Matthew, what do you think?
I feel like this monkey, like as soon as the person stops giving the monkey berries, the monkey's going to be like, why did you stop? What the fuck is going on?
Yes, Oh,
and I don't
I
mean like make
monkey.
A face that implies that. I mean literally say it just like I did.
Yes. Yes.
Great pick.
Thank you. Thank you. I also just wanted to mention, Matthew, did you look at his nostrils? They're like perfectly like they're like
oh,
perfect
wow. yeah,
slits.
Like,
they're so it, narrow.
It looks like, you know, if you were like learning to draw, you would like draw this and be like, no, like this isn't quite doesn't quite look like a real monkey. It's like too like the lines are too well defined and it's too silly looking. And
yeah.
then it comes
and,
to life somehow.
And then it's a real monkey. So anyway, yeah, that's the golden snub-nosed monkey eating berries available
Thank
on
you.
YouTube. And this week I get to do Now But Wow.
Ready.
This week I am happy to spread the word about a book that I'm almost finished reading that I bought an eternity ago and let sit on my bookshelf. And I can't believe it's taken me this long. The book is How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones.
I'm familiar with Saeed Jones. He's great.
Yeah. I think that I first like heard his name like on a podcast. I think that he was doing an interview or something. Anyway, I heard about this book and basically it's a memoir and it is his story of growing up in Lewisville, Texas, which is not far outside of Dallas, mm-hmm. As a black boy who is slowly understanding that he's gay mm-hmm. and how this impacts not only his relationship with his grandmother, but his mother and how he makes sense of who he is as a black gay man in America.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. It's also really a great length. I think it's under 200 pages, which makes it like bite-sized and it hits hard. So highly recommend. That's How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones.
And Saeed Jones is also a great follow on Twitter at The Ferocity.
Oh, nice. That is such a good handle.
Isn't it?
Yeah, really good.
All right, I think that's it. Our producer is Abby Circatella. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Chat with other people who listen to the show at reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Mm-hmm.
And until next time, I've been a snake this whole time.
Surprise!
Surprise!
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm a snake guy. We have a cake that no, actually we no longer have a cake.
Yeah,
we had a cake.
We almost no longer have a cake, and I just finished baking it at like 4 p.m. yesterday.
And this is our we almost no longer have a cake episode.
I'm Molly.
I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something. What?
We should start over. Sorry.
Fine.
I'm Matthew. No.